It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Well, as you know, news commentary is something we do a lot on this program. I don't do as much of it in December. In December, we do a lot of Christmas specials, both new ones and repeats. So there was a critical news story in December that I have not yet had a chance to comment on. It's recent news, but it's not current within the last week or so. This happened in December, and it has to do with Congress grilling Harvard and other universities. The first Amendment guarantees freedom of speech, at least in most cases, but not all speech has been free at Harvard. You see, for many years, they've had codes of conduct because the university is called to a higher standard. These codes include rules against any speech that's discriminatory or harassing or laced with the call to bullying. All students at Harvard are protected unless they're Jewish. Well, as always, it's good to be with you, but as always, lately, the news is not good. And what I just said a moment ago about Harvard is true for so many universities across our country. The information I'm giving to you comes from Fox News, and a lot of liberal mainstream media outlets are not really sharing this stuff, at least not in a whole lot of detail. Just recently, the presidents of Harvard, MIT, and University of Pennsylvania were confronted during a House committee hearing. It was dedicated to confronting the surge in anti-Semitism seen on American college campuses in the wake of the Israel-Hamas war. Representative Virginia Fox pressed the trio about the race-based ideology of the radical left, which she claimed the institutions are supporting. In her opening statement, Fox, chair of the House Education and Workforce Committee, held a moment of silence to recognize all the Israelis and others who have been killed, injured, or taken hostage by Hamas terrorists. She then addressed the three witnesses, Harvard University President Dr. Claudine Gay, University of Pennsylvania President Liz Miguel, and Massachusetts Institute for Technology President Dr. Sally Kornbluth. Fox said, "Each of you will have a chance to answer and to atone for the many specific instances of vitriolic, hate-filled anti-Semitism on your respective campuses that have denied students the safe learning environment they are due. As you confront our questions in this hearing, remember that you are not speaking to us, but to the students on your campuses who have been threatened and assaulted and who look to you to protect them." Well, that was a great opening speech. Unfortunately, these university professors were speaking to their left, the people that they were really afraid of and wanted to cater to, or perhaps agreed with. But Fox went on. She played a video of many pro-Palestinian protesters at college campuses shouting Intifada. That's an Arabic word for uprising that is used to describe past Palestinian campaigns against Israel. The second and most recent Intifada, which began in 2000, was marked by suicide bombings and other terror attacks. And of course, you all know what happened on October 7th. Fox went on to say, however, after the events of the past 2 months, it is clear that rabid anti-Semitism and the university are two ideas that cannot be cleaved from one another. We must be clear on the ideological dimension of this problem. For years, universities have stoked the flames of an ideology which goes by many names: anti-racism, anti-colonialism, critical race theory, DEI. The list goes on. Let me just say right here, many of the student protesters against Israel are from the LGBTQ community. And Hamas, if it ever came into power, would execute every member of the LGBTQ community. This happens in so many radical Muslim-run nations. Gotta see the irony. Or shall we call it sheer stupidity? stupidity and ignorance. And as always, the greater the ignorance, the greater the arrogance and self-righteousness. The chairwoman goes on. She says this value system centers the identity on immutable racial and sexual characteristics and presents a delusion that the color of one's skin and expression of one's chromosomes sorts society into classes of oppressed and oppressors. The idea here is that these days, if you're a person of color, you're oppressed. If you're white, you're an oppressor. And they view the Jews as white, although actually there's quite a tan Sephardic skin if you've ever looked at an Israeli. But the idea is Jews are being classed into the category of white. And yet there's something about anti-Semitism and Jew hatred that goes beyond whether or not people are viewing them as white. There's a lot more to it than that. As I've mentioned before, there's a spiritual component here that comes straight from the pit of hell. Anti-Semitism makes no sense. Anti-Semitism is one of the few things that unites the extreme left and the extreme right. Fox goes on, and now it is clear that Jews are at the bottom of the totem pole and without protection under this critical theory framework. Boy, is that the truth. She goes on and says, it proves your universities have, at minimum, a sense of accountability to the American people. But my praise for post-secondary education is very limited these days. Harvard, University of Pennsylvania, and MIT, you have a very big role to play in shaping the future for all of academia. This moment is an inflection point. It demands leaders of moral clarity with the courage to delineate good from evil and right from wrong. Well, it's so refreshing to see at least some people in Congress with moral scruples and a moral compass that isn't busted. Busted like in the definition of Isaiah, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Those are the times we're living in. People always ask me if we're the last generation to see the return of Christ. I don't know if we're the last generation to see the return of Christ. We may very well be. I do know that we're a generation that's living what Isaiah predicted. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who call darkness light and light darkness. Isaiah chapter 5. But perhaps the real star from these hearings is Elise Stefanik. Now, she's not Jewish herself. I mention that only because a lot of times in the face of anti-Semitism, the ones defending Jews are Jews. She is not Jewish. I want to point that out. Commenting on these hearings in an interview with Mark Levin, she says she asked the questions in such a way that it should have been an easy, yes, they were softballs she was pitching, but it will go down in history, she says, as the most viewed congressional testimony that Congress ever held. All three university presidents were uncomfortable. All of them equivocated, danced on the head of a pin, did not want to directly answer the question. She says to the president of Harvard, for instance, Harvard students calling for the mass murder of African Americans is not protected free speech at Harvard, correct? And then she asked the Harvard president if she was familiar with the term infatada, cited multiple instances of Harvard students chatting, there is only one solution, infatada, revolution, and globalize the infatada. These are all code words for massacre, and some of them in so many words are just calling for Israel's complete annihilation. And Gay admitted that speech calling for infatada and genocide against the Jewish people in Israel and globally was at odds with the values of Harvard, but then when pressed about whether or not it literally violates their code of conduct, she said, well, it depends on the context. The context. Would she have said anything about context if they were talking about a person of color? Would she have said anything about context if they were talking about a gay person or somebody from the larger LGBTQ community? The idea was, well, speech that leads to violence is a problem, but we've got to see the violence. That's the context. We've seen the context, ladies and gentlemen. We've seen the context. On October 7th, women were raped, and the rape was put out over Facebook. Babies had their heads severed. Children were murdered in front of their parents. Parents were murdered in front of their children. Babies were put inside of ovens. What more context do we need? And students have been justifying this. Oh, there's some people that claim it didn't happen. It was Jewish propaganda, but most of them are admitting it happened, and they still say Israel's responsible. Israel had it coming to them. Doesn't violate their code of conduct? If somebody made an inflammatory remark against the LGBTQ community, said that men are only men, that a man with male anatomy can't call himself a woman, he'd be severely disciplined at the very least. Maybe even kicked off the campus, but that's the age we live in. Our previous president of the United States faces a criminal trial because he said he believed that the election in 2020 was fixed. And the claim is that even though he didn't purposely call anybody to violence by claiming it was fixed, that led to some of the break-ins at the Capitol building on January 6th. So even when President Trump doesn't ask for any violence, it's inferred by him simply exercising a real right to freedom of speech. And yet when the extermination of Jews is called for, that's different. These are the same universities who, when conservative speakers come out and simply present ideas different than theirs, claim that those ideas are the true violence. And then, when groups like Antifa go out and commit violence, they call that free speech. Get that? Violence is free speech, but free speech is violence. Now, she's since tried to walk back her performance in Congress. Who can blame her for that? But I think we heard where she really stood on that day. Somebody calls for the extermination of Jews. That doesn't violate necessarily our code of conduct. That doesn't concern us. A person says that somebody born male cannot actually be a woman just because he says so. That concerns them. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Been involved with church for any length of time, either attending or especially if you've ever been in a leadership position, maybe as a volunteer, maybe on pastoral staff. If any of that is true, you've come to understand by now that churches are very preoccupied with numbers. Yes, numbers. How many are attending? How many are being saved? Now, of course, salvation is important. We want to see a lot of people saved. Those numbers are very important to keep track of. Attendance, not so so much. However, we need to all confess, in the interest of full disclosure, I, who have been involved with full-time ministry for many years, many different types of ministry, a lot of them on campuses, a lot of them on other places, I, too, was always concerned about numbers. I'm not saying I should have been, but I would be lying if I didn't admit to my own concerns about numbers. And I've run the full gamut. I've been on both sides of the numbers thing. I was in charge of ministries where the numbers went through the roof, such as my local ministry that I did for 5 years at UC Santa Barbara, a ministry to college students. We started with 9 people in my living room. By the 5th year, there were 100 people in an auditorium, and that's not counting almost another 100 that came through our ranks and graduated over the years. And those are just local ministries. I've been an itinerant speaker, and of course, an itinerant speaker likes having a big audience. The bigger the audience, the more they laugh, the more you get energy. And I did preach to crowds of several thousands in an auditorium, but also churches much smaller, several hundred, sometimes only 50. And then in my local ministry at UC San Diego, I did a lot of the same things I did at Santa Barbara, but I didn't call the Santa Barbara ministry a church. I called the San Diego ministry a church. And boy, when you call it a church, people have very different expectations. People found it bizarre that on Sunday morning instead of Tuesday night, we were meeting together. And they found it bizarre that it was all college students and we didn't have a variety of ages. Some people had trouble believing that we were a real church. The numbers were not as good there. The numbers were much smaller there. We barely ever had 30 or 40 at a time. Sometimes we'd do special events and special dramas and have a lot more people there. And interestingly enough, this ministry led many people to Christ, but not all of them joined our ministry, which was fine. And then out of those that did join our ministry over the years, they would graduate. The numbers were always small. So I've seen small numbers. I've seen big numbers. I have been on both sides of this equation, and it's allowed a little bit of objectivity. Well, how biblical is all of this concern about numbers? Where would the Bible come down on this? Well, actually, we see the Bible on both sides of this equation. You go to the book of Acts, chapter 2, very early in the movement of Christianity, this ministry under the apostles. It says, and the Lord added to their number daily, those being saved. And of course, again, like I said, salvation is important. But Luke, the writer of the book of Acts, he's taking great interest in the numbers. And in that same chapter, he says some 3,000 were added that day. So sometimes the big numbers are a good thing in the Bible, but other times they're not. When God called Gideon to go to war to defend his country, Gideon got an army together and God said, the army's too big. We can do this with much fewer people. And when David, apparently for prideful reasons, decided to take a census of Israel, God sent him a prophet and rebuked him and chastised him and brought punishment upon him. Not punishment for his sins. Christ pays the atonement for our sins, but the kind of punishment that corrects. And David learned his lesson. He shouldn't have been that concerned about numbers. One of my very first full-time, or I should say part-time jobs where I was in ministry, I was in college, and I had a part-time job as an intern at my church. It was a very big church, and I used to go to the staff meetings. I was involved with the college department. They'd go around to each department, and the only question they would ask people was, how many are coming? We never heard, how are they growing? What kind of discipleship are you doing? And I realized most churches would ask more than that, but honestly, in most cases, the numbers are of the most importance to them. Yes, numbers are a sign of healthy growth. One of many signs of healthy growth, I should say. But we are far too preoccupied with it, be that as it may, for better or worse, since my colleagues out there are concerned about numbers, who am I to not help? I'm going to help you in this cause. Now, with the advice I'm about to give you, please know everything I'm going to suggest will either increase the numbers of your church or at least give the appearance of greater numbers so that it looks better. Yes, it's time for another episode of How to Inflate the Numbers of Your Church with your old pal, Bob. Thank you. Thank you. I used to love the David Letterman show, and one thing he used to do every night was come up with a top 10 list. So I'm going to offer the top 10 ways to either make your church grow or make it appear that it's growing, as always, starting with the 10th and moving on to the number one position, the one of the most importance. Number 10. Put mirrors up on the walls of the sanctuary during Sunday morning services. Number 9. Count demon-possessed people more than once. Number 8, hold a special pool party and count each person as a new baptism. Number 7, start including people's pets in your altar call. Number 6, promise the men that quiche will no longer be served during the Wednesday night potluck. Number 5, give out less convicting answers to Bible questions. For example, Pastor, what's the first thing a person needs to do to receive forgiveness of sin? Well, first, you must sin. Number 4, tell people to raise their hands if they wish to get saved and join the church, and during the sermon, interpret hands covering up yawning as hands raised. Number 3, offer as a special gift to new time visitors a coupon either to Taco Bell or Mexican food. Number 2, count God. Since he exists as a Trinity, that's an additional 3 members. And the number 1 way to boost your numbers in church for confessions, put in an express line, 5 sins or less. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Check out these terrific customer reviews for Bob Siegel's science fiction novel, Push the Winds Around. Another winner from Mr. Siegel. I've always loved the time travel stories, and this one takes a creative approach. Like H.G. Wells' classic, it delves into morals and metaphysics. And as any good time travel mystery, it leaves you satisfied while raising questions at the same time. Here's another review. Quick, thought-provoking, enjoyable read. And just one more. My kind of book. Adventure, fun, excitement, suspense, time travel, love, and a day at the beach. What's not to like? A great book to lose yourself in. Happy reading. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Advantages to having a radio show is you not only talk about the important things. As you know, I like to do the personal vendettas, the minor annoyances, stuff not nearly as important, but I do share little anecdotes out of my life. And I want to start with speed bumps. Yes, speed bumps in parking lots, particularly in stores and malls. Now, I can't stand speed bumps. If you don't notice them, they're not good for your car. If you do notice them, you have to slow down. And what bugs me the most is the reason we have them. We have them because reckless people used to go speeding around parking lots, putting other lives in danger. They would do it on motorcycles. They would do it in their sports cars. They'd go as fast as they could. So they put in these speed bumps so that people couldn't do that. At least no sensible person would do that. They wouldn't want to damage the car. The problem is, those of us who are law-abiding citizens, those who do not go 90 miles per hour through a parking lot, have to deal with the speed bumps. I hate it when the population has to pay for what one or two people had been doing. And it goes far beyond speed bumps. A couple of weeks ago, I was sick, and every time I would buy a new bottle of Tylenol or any kind of pills or medication, you know the drill. You take off the cap, and then there's this seal on the top that you usually have to cut with a knife or find some flap to pull back. They call it safety sealed. I call it psycho sealed. Because many years ago, this was big in the news, we had what was called the Tylenol murders. People were putting poison into Tylenol bottles, which did open much more quickly in those days, which you did have access to easier in those days. But people would go into the stores and poison them. But my point right now is the way it affects everybody else. Every time I open a bottle now, I can't stand seeing that safety seal because it reminds me of what was once done. And of course, the stores need to do it. Of course, the companies need to do it, or they're liable. And forget being liable, they're saving lives. So that is very important. But I have to confess, every single time I open a bottle of Tylenol or anything else and I see that safety seal, I go, oh yeah, it's psycho sealed. In general, we live in a time when it's not easy to open things up. And this goes beyond danger. This gets into things like CDs or Blu-rays or DVDs. Now, I know I'm dating myself because you can barely find a store that sells those things anymore. You usually have to go online. I still like them. I did another whole program of my concern about the streaming service, how easy it is to censor, not have the material you want, or edit what they don't think is politically correct or woke. And so I'm holding on to my collection. It's important to me to still buy this stuff as long as I can. But have you noticed, those of you who still buy CDs or DVDs, how difficult it is to open up? They have their own kind of psycho seal on there. There's all kinds of stickers and foldings, and I usually have to get out a knife or something. Well, this reminds me of the time years ago, Jim Carrey was on a talk show. I believe it was the Jay Leno show. And he had just come out with that movie, Bruce Almighty, where he got to be God for a day. And the host said to him, if you really were God and you had all-encompassing power over the whole universe, what would be the first thing you'd do? And Jim Carrey said, if I were God and I had all the powers of God, I would draw upon all my might and all my power, and I would personally open up a CD. I've never been a great Jim Carrey fan, but I've got to give him credit for that one. That one was hilarious. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others do not.
You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church.
Thank you. Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Always great to be joined by my producer, Brendan Thomas. All right. This is, I feel like Jim Barrier. Three guesses as to what our topic of discussion will be today.
I know. It's pretty obvious. I think Inspector Clouseau
himself. Henry Mancini and the Pink Panther theme.
I think Inspector Clouseau could actually figure that one out too, even him.
A clear, as he would say.
Yes. The reason why I bring up the series today is because they have just announced that the script for the new Pink Panther movie has been officially finished and it's ready to go. And they already hired an Inspector Clouseau actor. Get this. They hired Eddie Murphy, of all people. Yeah, I don't see it yet, but
I have not seen it with anybody but Peter Sellers, and I'm a huge Steve Martin fan. I think Steve Martin is hilarious. I could not stand the remake of the Pink Panther with Steve Martin.
See, I will get to that in a second, but for now, what I will say is it's going to be an animated film, and it's going to deal with Clouseau, but not the Pink Panther diamond, the Pink Panther character himself, actually. And that's going to be
because a lot of people don't realize this. The Pink Panther was created for the movie The Pink Panther.
Right.
And then they started making animated shorts of it. Or did they make an animated short first?
I think they did the shorts first.
They did one called Think Pink, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then the best part of the Pink Panther movies is seeing the Pink Panther cartoon at the beginning. Then they made a Saturday morning cartoon out of the Pink Panther. And then later on, they made another Saturday morning cartoon where he had kids. And so now they're merging the Saturday morning with the movie series in
exactly.
a way?
Yes, exactly. So
sounds like a real bad idea to me.
Well, I will keep it open. Right now, directing the movie is Jeff Fowler, who also directed the Sonic the Hedgehog film series, which I think it's just an okay thing. I thought Jim Carrey, you were talking about Jim Carrey in the last monologue, he was overbearing in that movie series, but that's not Jeff Fowler's fault. You know, Jeff Fowler's just there for the special effects and making sure everybody else's acting's good, and it was good. So right now, Amazon has the rights to the movies, and they're looking to also make a spinoff TV series if the movie does well in theaters. So we'll wait and see. But for now, in
celebration... Now, do Amazon movies play in theaters too?
Or yes,
do
they
So they've gone beyond just streaming now.
Exactly, yeah. They go into theaters
too. Amazon's everywhere. Amazon's taking over the world!
So, I wanted to look back on the Pink Panther film series and rank them from the worst to the best.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do because some of them were just fantastic and others, not so much.
So, the worst one in the series, in my opinion, was Trail of the Pink Panther. This was the second movie that came out after Peter Sellers passed away. And what they did was they took a bunch of footage.
Footage. That they hadn't used. Correct. And then, so he was in the beginning of the movie.
Sporadically throughout the movie.
But didn't he disappear about halfway through the movie and get replaced, or is that the one that came before it?
That was the one before that one.
Wow.
And I'll get to that in a second, too. So it's about a news reporter who's following all of Inspector Clouseau's previous adventures to try to find where his whereabouts are after the movie of Curse of the Pink Panther.
They just can't let a series die, even when the hero's actually literally dead.
So I will stretch to give a pro about the movie. It's cool to have these never-before-seen scenes into the film, I guess. I mean, they weren't very funny scenes, and I could see why they were cut.
But that could have been an extra on a DVD collection.
Absolutely.
Accomplished the same thing.
Exactly. You didn't have to spend my money to go to the theaters to watch it.
No, not at all.
Of course, the con is, because it's all footages, the reporter and Clouseau never meet up in the same place. They're different camera angles all the time. And also, the pacing is extremely slow, and it feels like it's a clip show of a television episode instead of a feature-length film. So an interesting fact, Peter Sellers' widow, Lynn Frederick, filed a $3 million lawsuit claiming the film actually diminished Peter Sellers' reputation, and she only won $1 million in damages.
She probably felt they were dancing all over his grave.
I bet so, yeah. The only reason why she won is because there was an actual letter from Peter Sellers himself who wrote, "I don't want this footage to be out in the public. I just want to just keep it away." And MGM ignored that request, and because of that, they had to pay $1 million, which is pocket change to MGM, but still, it's very disrespectful. So that's why I put that at number 11. Number 10, you brought him up, The Pink Panther 2 with Steve Martin in it. And when I watched
I didn't
movie,
even watch that one because I hated the first one so much.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. See, I love the first one so much, which I'll get to in a second, that I was excited to see this number 2, and man, what a number 2 it was.
Literally number 2.
So in this one, the Pink Panther diamond is stolen again, and now Clouseau needs to have a team to help him get this diamond back. Why would Clouseau need a team? I completely understand maybe a buddy cop thing, but he doesn't need a team. He's always gotten the diamond back by himself.
Well,
all the time.
Isn't it true? I know that in the first remake, Kato wasn't in it. Was he in
the second one?
Oh, he was in the second one?
No, he was in the remake, but he was played as a different character entirely. He played as the buddy cop situation.
Okay.
Yeah. So, pro, again, I'm stretching for this one. The acting isn't bad. Everyone is trying their best with what they're working with. But the con, of course, is that, like I said, why does Clouseau need a team to get this Pink Panther diamond? In the previous films, he's always done it by himself or with Kato, at least on his side. And also, I felt like the script itself was very uninspired and very dull. Surprisingly enough, it was written by Steve Martin. I would thought if you were going to write a movie with you starring in it, you would bring your A material, but nothing there.
Yeah, because he's done so many A projects.
Well, you know, he has had slip-ups, but he has done a lot of really, really good projects.
He really has.
Yeah. Also helping him write was Scott Neustadter and Michael H. Weber. Out of the movies I've seen with them, they've also written 500 Days of Summer, The Fault in Our Stars, and The Disaster Artist. All really, really good films. So it does shock me that this one was just really, really dull and boring. Next up is Curse of the Pink Panther. This was the first film after Peter Sellers passed away. This time, an American detective, Clifton Slay, who's played by Ted Wass, is assigned to find Clouseau and his whereabouts. The cool thing about this is Roger Moore plays Inspector Clouseau in this movie, who was in the middle of filming James Bond at the same time. So I thought it was quite interesting. He's actually a very funny actor.
Is this where they did like a, it was supposed to be like a makeover on his face,
yes,
like a plastic surgery?
Yes.
Okay. I had forgotten about that, but I was vaguely remembering as you were talking.
As you were just explaining that, that's a con. Why are we making the plot so complicated to Pink Panther? Apparently the plot goes that Inspector Clouseau was the one who stole the diamond, and he's just a good cop gone rogue all of a sudden. And I'm like, well, why? That doesn't make any sense for his character, nor hold inspiration of him trying to make sure the Pink Panther diamond doesn't get stolen from anybody. Also, I think Ted Wass isn't very funny throughout this movie. I think he's trying way too hard, and there's a lot of scenes where he could really, really kill some people.
There were times I did find him humorous, but the whole time I'm watching, I'm saying, did this thing really need to be made?
No, because it was just a money grab situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting fact, Rowan Atkinson was actually supposed to play Inspector Clouseau in this one, but he declined, stating publicly, no one can ever replace Sellers in that role. It was strictly made for him and him alone.
Well, my hat goes off to somebody who had the integrity to say it.
But to be fair, I could definitely see why they would have chosen Rowan Atkinson. I mean, Johnny English and Mr. Bean. I mean, those are very physical roles.
Oh, those Mr. Bean movies are hilarious.
They are hilarious,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So if anyone's going to be playing a physical comedy kind of actor, I think he's a very good choice.
Well, the more talented you are, the less you feel you have to go around proving it to people.
That's true. That's true. All right, so coming into number 8 is Son of the Pink Panther. And this one, The Princess of Lugash, who...
This is another in the series of Peter Sellers is gone, but
yes,
we just won't bury him.
Exactly, yeah. So The Princess of Lugash is abducted, and it's up to Clouseau's illegitimate son to save her.
Is this supposed to be the same princess that was in the original
Pink
Panther?
Correct, yeah, but they had a different
actress.
Probably
played by a different actor.
Exactly, yeah. This film has an interesting way of continuing the series. I guess we could have spun it off. I mean, we had the son of James Bond. We had the son of Indiana Jones to try to continue those things, but obviously we stopped right there where we said, no, we're just going to continue on with James Bond. We're going to continue on to Indiana Jones, that stuff. So also, in general, I feel bad for... The star of the movie is Roberto Benigni. I don't know if you're familiar with his work. Oh, man, he is such a good actor. I will highly suggest you watch It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Holocaust film, so it's very, very depressing, but he's trying to make
it's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Beautiful Life.
Oh, I saw that.
Okay, good.
That won Best Foreign Film, and I think
Best Picture and Best Actor.
Yes, he was trying to shield his son from what was really going on in the concentration.
Yeah, exactly. And
it was
a
wonderful movie. The guy did a really good job.
And talk about a risk he made on that movie, because you're making a comedy about the Holocaust,
and yet they succeeded in making it a very serious statement about the Holocaust at the same time.
But absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad we got the title correct, because that was a great movie.
It's a very, very good movie, but I feel bad for his filmography if you look otherwise, because it's just horrendous. And this is one of those movies. First off, it's supposed to take place in France. Why do we have an Italian actor trying to do a French accent? It just sounds
so
strange.
Well, what I always thought was so hilarious about the Peter Sellers' Pink Panther movies is he's French and nobody in France can understand his French accent.
No, but I like that. It builds with his character.
That's what's so funny about it.
But having an Italian try to do a French accent, it just doesn't mix
well.
It
doesn't work out too well.
And unfortunately, also, they try to squeeze as much comedy into it by putting zany sound effects for every stunt that he performs. It's not necessary.
That's Peter Sellers didn't need that. Batman series where it would say Pow and Zowie and Biff on top of the
screen. But at least that fits the style of the movie. Pink Panther already established, we're not going to do that. Whatever stunts we do, we'll have no laugh track with it or anything. Because feel as if the plain simpleness of those stunts just makes it funny, which it is.
I've never been a big fan of slapstick, but I've always loved the Pink Panther movies because Peter Sellers was an exception. I thought his slapstick was hilarious.
Absolutely. And what's important about slapstick humor is timing. And Peter Sellers had exceptional timing on his part, from scenes like he's backing up and he accidentally knocks into the pool cues and he's trying to hold all the pool cues back and they just keep untwisting and falling down.
And then he demolishes that piano. They go, that's just a precious Steinway. Nothing anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of classic scenes with him and he knows how to use those scenes to his advantage. So an interesting fact about this movie, Kevin Kline was supposed to play Dreyfus in this film, but he declined after reading the script and said it was horrendous. I don't blame him. Kevin Kline later became Chief Inspector Dreyfus in the remake of the Pink Panther series. And then, interesting, I never heard this before, there was a standby contract in case Benigni wanted to pull out any time and this actor would step in at any time to film out his scenes, and that was Tim Curry. I've never heard of an actor having a backup kind of signage like that, like, oh, I'll just step in as soon as he says
well,
no.
Well, I guess they in live theater, they use understudies all the time. I guess they must do it for motion pictures as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. So next movie I have is Inspector Clouseau. That was
where Alan Arkin took over the role.
That's correct. Scotland Yard had
That was way earlier in the series. There had not been very many Pink Panther movies made.
Right, so. This was the third in the series.
Boy, after that, it's amazing they went on to make any more.
I know, yeah. So the Scotland Yard has an organized crime of robberies. It is up to Clouseau to find the people involved in these robberies. I have to say, Alan Arkin,
he is a good actor.
He is a good actor. And you know what? He's not that bad of a Clouseau, I have to say, too.
I don't believe I have ever seen this one.
Oh, okay.
Now, the thought of someone other than Sellers playing the role I don't like, but I guess I should be fair and see the darn thing.
He's actually not that bad. What the issue is, Blake Edwards wants to stay on these shots for a long time, stretch these jokes out, and you know...
Oh, Blake Edwards likes to stretch things forever. Did you ever see The Great Race? That was a 3-hour movie, and I loved it. But they probably could have cut an hour out of it.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Another thing, too, is that, once again, when they linger on shots with Peter Sellers, he knows, I can't keep going with this joke. Okay, and he hasn't said cut. I got to go come up with another joke. One of the best scenes from the first Pink Panther movies is he kisses the hand of the princess, and he starts it backing up, and then he trips over the staircase. Now, the camera's still on him. He could have easily, I'm going to keep tripping on each staircase as I keep going past over and over. But instead, he's very smart. He keeps the scene going by coming up with different jokes. Like, for example, there is a small doorway in the same scene, and him and Dreyfus come and knock into the same doorway over and over. And then he says, okay, you go first. And so they keep walking. Again, camera's still on them. And Dreyfus goes one way, and then he says, okay, I'm going to do something else. And then he goes to the other direction, and then Dreyfus yells, Clouseau! You see him still running back that way. See, that's coming up with original jokes as you keep going. You don't linger on the same joke and keep that joke going on and on and on, and you're just, can we just end the scene? He's coming up with original material, and I appreciate that a lot. Interesting fact for Inspector Clouseau is Blake Edwards and Peter Sellers got into a heated argument, and both of them refused to work on another movie together. So Edwards was so heated about that situation that he just flat out refused to direct the movie. As soon as that was heard, Peter Sellers then said, I'm interested in the movie, and Bud Yorkin came in to start directing the film. However, Peter Sellers then decided, I'm actually going to do the role only if I see the script first. And Yorkin said, absolutely not. And so Alan Arkin got selected after his movie in the role of The Russians Are Coming. The Russians Are Coming is the name of the film. So that's an interesting fact on top of that. Now we come to the movie I'm going to argue with you about. The 2006 remake of The Pink Panther starring Steve Martin.
It sucked raw eggs with two straws.
I disagree. I thought the movie was absolutely comedic genius, except for one scene, and it's probably the most memorable scene out of every single
one. The one about the ham sandwich?
Yes, exactly.
It was like, everybody loves the thick French accent that nobody can understand, so let's just take that and run it.
Right.
It seemed like they were just doing an imitation imitation. It was like a skit on a retreat where somebody's doing an imitation of the Pink Panther movie. That's right. The way I saw that.
It's a fair enough judgment.
I'm glad we at least agree on that one that scene, because I do agree that it was the worst scene in the movie. I'm in complete agreement with you on that.
I absolutely have to say, I love the fact that they actually had enough guts to go with the very end scene where there's an Asian woman explaining how she heard about the murder out of nowhere, like a Don Quixote situation. And he says, yeah, I spoke Chinese. I don't know how you don't speak Chinese. I understand every word she said. I know who the murderer is in this movie. And it was really well done. And I have to say, Beyonce did a very good job acting. I usually have mixed opinions when singers want to step into a movie role, because a lot of the times it can go really, really horrible. But there's times where it actually does very well, and I think that's a very good example. An interesting fact, do you know who was supposed to take over for Inspector Clouseau before Steve Martin stepped in? It was Chris Tucker or Mike Myers. They wanted double the amount of what Steve Martin wanted, and they decided to go with Steve Martin because he's half the price of those guys. And the original film was actually going to be an adult comedy, but Sony said, absolutely not. You're going to remake this whole movie again, redo the whole production, and make it a family-oriented film. Next up, Revenge of the Pink Panther. Now, this one, a French businessman is working with the New York Mafia. The Mafia is looking to kill the businessman. However, the businessman is able to convince the Mafia not to kill him by stealing the Pink Panther diamond and killing Clouseau. For me, this is a good evolution into the series, because now we're incorporating a lot more disguises. Not saying he didn't do disguises in the prior films, but this is a good way to incorporate it into the story. One of my favorite scenes in the movie is when he dresses up like a mobster and he's talking like a mobster. He goes, hey, mamma mia, cannoli al Pacino. And he's hugging all the mafia members, and the mafia members are probably like, what is he doing? There are some scenes that don't age very well. Like he goes to Hong Kong and he dresses like an Asian tourist. Looking at the movie now, that would have never flown in today's records. But I thought it's still a very, very funny film. Unfortunately, I would say it's one of the weakest ones from Peter Sellers out of all the Pink Panther films, but again, he's an absolute icon when it comes to this role, so I can't complain much. Interesting fact for this one, Edwards originally had so much footage of Peter Sellers, he was able to string a film together to make one film on a very cheap budget. But Peter Sellers at the last second quickly stepped in and said no to the project and said, we're going to make a brand new film entirely, and thus came apart Revenge of the Pink Panther. The Pink Panther Strikes Again is coming in at number 4. This is about Chief Inspector Dreyfus has gone insane over Clouseau's antics over the years, that he sets a plot to kill Clouseau.
This is the Pink Panther Strikes Again.
Yes, exactly.
This was my favorite of all of them.
Oh, really?
I would put it in the number one spot.
And it has the most memorable scene about, does your dog
my
bite?
Yes, the best. I was going to say, before we close, what's the best line? Does your dog bite? And then he says no. And then the dog bites him when he bites. I thought you said your dog did not bite. That is not my dog.
I love that scene.
Now, my problem with The Pink Panther Strikes Again, though, is the movie that came after it, Revenge of the Pink Panther.
Whoa, spoiler.
All of a sudden, Dreyfus, as the menacing villain, had completely disintegrated at the end of the last movie. He's just in the next one.
Right.
And they don't say anything about it. Now, I understand it's a comedy, but for Pete's sakes, they could have thrown us some kind of bone.
Well, here's my issue about the whole film here. Out of all the Pink Panther series, I have to say the story behind this was the weakest, because it focused more on the comedy. I think this is the funniest one out of all of them here. I think that the fact that it has nothing to do with the Pink Panther diamond is kind of strange, because this was the first film.
No, by now
series.
They're just calling them all Pink Panther, whether the diamond's in it or not.
Yeah, and I think I have to say the evolution of Dreyfus all of a sudden just going to say, I'm going to kill Clouseau out of nowhere.
But that scene where Clouseau's trying to cross that moat and get into the castle, oh my gosh, I could not stop laughing.
So, of interesting fact, according to Edwards, the original cut of the film was 3 hours long. However, fans of the Pink Panther series cannot find a script that was that length. So the original cut was actually 2 hours, and it was officially released at 103 minutes, thus continuing a feud between Peter Sellers and Edwards as well. Number 3 is A Shot in the Dark. A murder happens at a millionaire's home, and it's up to Clouseau to solve the case.
Now, that was originally a Broadway play, completely different story. They bought the rights to it, didn't use the play, and then just made it the sequel to The Pink Panther.
Very
instead.
Much so. Good job. That was my interesting fact. The name of the play actually came from a French play called Le Idiot. I love that.
Idiot.
Edwards said that he would only direct the film if he could change the characters and make the main character be Clouseau, and the studio agreed upon then. So that's why it's called A Shot in the Dark instead of any Pink Panther series, for that matter. So again, very good stuff. My only issue is that the comedy is very laid back in the sense that there's no over the top.
No, that's very true in the very first movie that's just called The Pink Panther.
Yes.
Clouseau is less funny in that movie than any other one. And David Niven was supposed to be the main character.
Yeah.
And he was funny, but compared to the newer ones, that one bores me, even though it's the one that started them all.
I actually liked the Pink Panther one because I actually thought that Peter Sellers was the best part of that movie.
Well, he was, but he wasn't as funny as he is in the other ones.
And I thought David Niven did great, honestly.
He did. It was much more a real story. You were almost watching something half serious, half comedy when you were watching the original Pink Panther.
But I really loved his performance so much that I had to put it at my number two spot here. So an interesting fact about that one is that Peter Sellers was actually not the original choice to play Inspector Clouseau. It was actually Peter Ustinov.
Peter Ustinov, oh, mm-hmm. Wonderful actor.
Yes, and he wanted to be joined by Ava Gardner. However, Ava Gardner wanted to have only her personal staff do the makeup and everything for her, and that's it. And the production said, no, absolutely not. So him and her left the film, and in came the original actors that are now in those films. So there you go. My number one choice, I had to disagree with you. The Return of the Pink Panther is my number one choice.
Well, I did like that. That's certainly among the top. I think The Return of the Pink Panther and The Pink Panther Strikes Again are my two favorites.
My favorite thing about this movie is Christopher Plummer. And
yeah, boy, he played one mean guy, didn't
he? I know.
He was taking over the role that David Niven had played in the previous movie, The Phantom.
Yeah, and even more so, his chemistry of Peter Sellers' antics is just amazing. Like, honestly, I think there's no one else that really could have played that role better than Christopher Plummer at the time. So that was why it held up strong in my opinion. I will be skeptic on how this new film is going to come out, but we got till March 2025 till it comes out right now. So it's going
to
be a while.
Hear that, producers? You have till March 2025 to change your mind and not make this Albatross.
That's right. But in general, I hope everyone enjoys my Pink Panther series, and I hope to do a lot more rankings coming up too, because I have some really interesting ideas. Like, I want to do a whole president's list and rank them from the worst to the best. Possibly.
Wow.
Yeah, I would want to do that.
It would only take me 3 seconds to tell you the worst, but we've had a lot of bad ones.
That's right. That's right. So for now, I'll just have to leave you guys on anticipation to find out what that would be.
Well, that'll be fun, yeah. And we will look forward to that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for this time tonight, Bob.
My pleasure. It was fun, Brendan. We'll see you next time.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.